Hello and welcome to Season 2 of Inside the Therapy Room. I'm your host, Sam Sellers. I'm a registered therapist, a wife and a fur mama, and I am passionate about breaking down the barriers and stigma attached to therapy. I want to begin by first honouring the traditional custodians of the land we live and work on. Today, Anita is on Wiradjuri land and Sam is on Gundungurra land. We pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions and cultures of our First Nations people. We must always remember that the land below our feet is, was and always will be Aboriginal land. Today I'm chatting to Anita Geary. Her dedication to improving the lives of children, adults and families as a mental health social worker spanned 2 decades. Her approach involves integrating her trained therapy dogs, Bacardi and Kahlua, into her therapy practice, offering a distinctive and deeply enriching experience. Anita's expertise in animal-assisted therapy recently led her to present at the 2023 Animal Therapies Conference, focusing on the application of animal-assisted therapy for those affected by interpersonal trauma. She's also actively contributing to the development of practice standards in the field of animal-assisted therapy and runs a regional private practice. Beyond her clinical work, Anita provides tailored training and clinical supervision to professionals in the helping profession, enhancing their skills through trauma-informed, reflective, and strength-based practices. Her passion for making a positive impact is evident in her work as she continues to guide countless individuals towards a brighter and more fulfilling future. Today's episode is all about the power of animal-assisted therapy. We hope you enjoy joining us inside the therapy room.
Welcome, Anita. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited about this episode. I particularly looked up somebody who worked in this space because anybody who knows me particularly knows just how much I love dogs. Mm-hmm. We have a sweet 3-year-old Cavoodle that is a frequenter in the room, just sort of sits next to me. I love the idea of animals being sort of integrated into the therapy space.
Yeah.
You are here to talk about animal-assisted therapy. Tell us what that is and why it is not what I just described as as Naya being in the room with us. She is not a therapy dog by any means. She is just in the room providing lots of love and joy for clients. But why that's not animal-assisted therapy?
Okay. So I'll start just sort of as a side note. I do have my Cavoodle in here in the room with me today. And it wasn't until you pressed record that he's decided he's going to pick a little growling argument with something outside the window. So he's just kind of laying there. So if anyone hears any barking, that's Winston.
Winston, what a sweet name.
He's 15 months old and he likes to argue with things that nobody else can see. So he's not, but interestingly, I guess moving back into the question that you asked, is he comes to the office with me. Mm-hmm. He will meet... I won't say he's got little man syndrome. Yeah. He's the littlest of the family and he feels like he needs to protect us all sometimes. Yeah. So we've got 2 Labradors. I've got Bacardi and Kahlua. And they are 7 and 5. So Bacardi's is the mum. And they're certified therapy dogs. So this is, I guess, where the difference begins. Winston comes to the office, he's getting familiar with the office space, getting familiar with clients and being around different populations. And we have some clients in wheelchairs or different kind of assistance technologies that they need. Yeah. So he's sort of getting used to that whilst on a leash, exposure really, so that he's comfortable and around others and various different people, ages, heights, sounds of voices, all those kinds of things. But he's not a therapy dog. So we don't use him in the room, or we don't work with him in the room as a therapy dog. He he's like a nice little thing and it's lovely and the endorphins are released and everybody loves him and, you know, that's great. But he isn't a therapy dog in the same way that Bacardi and Kahlua are. They've done their certification. They've done their intensive training and they have to be reassessed every 12 months.
Oh, wow.
To make sure that they're still safe and suitable. And that's, because it's a developing field in Australia. So there is a lot of therapists ranging across different allied health professions or volunteers or within schools, teachers, teachers' aides, hospitals. There's all sorts of people who are professionals taking their animals into their workplaces and into the work environments. So technically that's not animal assisted therapy. You might call that animal assisted intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But it's once we get that certification and the training is in the specific inclusion of the animal into the practice. So that's sort of where it switches over from a feel good to, I guess, more of a formal therapy dog.
Yeah.
Piece or it more formal therapy dog. The work though, the work, we're still the therapists.
Yeah.
It's still me doing the work. But the more I get to know my dog, the better I can utilize them in sessions.
Mm.
So for example, Bacardi is amazing with anxiety. She can pick up on anxiety before anybody else, I swear, in the town has picked up that there's anxiety. She's really good at it. And she will go over to that client and she'll nuzzle underneath their arm. And she'll sort of start there with her big, beautiful eyes looking up at them. And usually, though, what I find is the client's so intensely within this space of whatever they're talking about, it's bringing out the anxiety.
Okay.
That they sort of like, like they're not really paying attention to her. She's just being a little bit annoying. And then if we ignore her, she will then sit up and put a paw sort of on the client.
Mm.
We continue to ignore her. She'll stand over the top of the client, front leg, one side, back legs on the other, and she'll be like looking at me, looking at the client, looking at me as if to go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, we need to stop a minute. This isn't a regulated space.
Yeah.
And if you continue to ignore her, she will turn to the client, which usually the client, if they're not acknowledging her, they'll be like looking around her because they've got something they really want to say and she's in the way.
Yeah.
And if we continue even further, she'll come over and she'll jump up on me as if to go, enough, everybody. Yeah, let's just stop. So initially, as a very green animal assisted therapist, I was like, get down. Like, oh my God. I expected her to kind of be like a guide dog, I think. But it's not that. I had an amazing supervision session one day with somebody and she said, what are you doing? She goes, Bacardi's trying to be a therapy dog and you're telling her to be quiet. Like, this isn't about having a perfectly trained dog sit there and do tricks or treats or be perfectly behaved and sit on their bed or whatever. It's the nitty gritty of the animal itself. It's its instincts, its relationships, connection. That's what the dog brings on top of my therapeutic work, my professional work. So now that I recognize what she's doing, when she starts to nuzzle, obviously I'm not going to put my hand up and go, excuse me, stop talking. We need to tend to Bacardi. But I'll get curious. I'll be like, just wondering if we take a second, what's going on for you right now? Because Bacardi's trying to tell us something. What is it that's going on for you right now? And I'll get the person to just kind of sit and she'll lock eyes with them and they'll lock eyes with her. And like, actually, my heart's racing a little bit. Like, okay, all right. So what if we just take a second, just pat Bacardi, starting at the top of her head, slowly down across her shoulder blades, down her spine to her tail, just slowly, just quietly, just do that. And they'll tend to turn, they'll lock together, and the person will pat until when they're regulated, Bacardi will be like, okay. And then she'll just lay down beside them again. And it's like, that's animal assisted therapy to me.
Yeah.
That piece of, I might not have been able to pick up that that person was particularly dysregulated. Like I didn't in the beginning. I just thought Bacardi was being, because she's quite a stubborn girl. I love it a bit, but she's definitely stubborn.
Right.
So it's working with those sorts of things, getting the, utilizing the dog's natural instinct, listening to them. And I guess in turn, what I'm saying to the client or what the client's learning about themselves is just to slow down and check, check in. And then to notice something and to respond to that, because we can come back to that same conversation in a minute, but it's okay just to take a second.
Yeah.
So we're building that awareness of that dysregulation, how it presents and how it feels internally, but then also the resourcing of just taking a moment, being mindful, and stroking. And then on top of that, you've got this dog cares about me so much that it's saying, whoa, 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 take a minute for yourself. You know, so if you can layer all of those things together, you've got a connection that I can't give as authentically to a client as Bacardi can. I, you know, I'm not going to let them stroke my shoulder while we lock eyes. Like that's weird and well outside of boundaries. That's not okay. But if we're looking at attachment and nurturance, eye contact, rhythmic connection, touch, that's all so important. And so she can do that. She can step into that space. And then when that client's okay, she's like, okay, you're okay, but I'm still here.
Yeah.
So there's that piece, I think. That's where you have your certification, right? That makes you an animal assisted therapist with an animal, with a therapy dog. But it's how you take that, those two pieces, and you integrate it meaningfully into your client's session, into your client's world, even, because we have so many young teens who just adore the girls so much, and Winston, but he's not quite there.
Poor Winston.
So they'll use that in between sessions. They'll talk about how they, you know, recognize that they were getting a bit worked up, and they have a particular cushion at home or something that's, you know, like those furry kind of cushions.
Yeah.
So they'll do the padding of that, which then reconnects them back to that regulation moment. Or we've named their anxiety Bacardi because it's intrusive and stubborn. Right?
Yeah.
But all it's really trying to do is look out for you.
Yeah. Right?
So we kind of use that to just take some of the edge off of the experience of anxiety, just sort of like ACT when you're diffusing that anxiety or that thought. We've named anxiety for certain people Bacardi, like just Bacardi's trying to get in your face again. She's just worried about you, but we just give it some attention and we give it some moment, some compassion and connection. It'll lay back down again beside you, like it's okay.
Yeah.
So it's really about the developing of the skills, knowing your animal, and being providing an intuned space for that to really roll out.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a very collaborative approach. It's much more than the dog is used as a tool of regulation. Yeah. It's that they're a co-therapist almost, and your attunement with them is just as important as their attunement to the client.
Absolutely, because that dog has equal rights in that room.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we're talking about, because it used to be that we used to describe them as like a tool, you know, we're using, but we're really looking at trying to change our language now, because if Bacardi doesn't want to come into the room, she doesn't come into the room. That very rarely happens.
Yeah.
But if she doesn't want to be a part of a session, then she isn't forced to be a part of a session. Kahlua, so what I just described about Bacardi with anxiety, Kahlua couldn't do it. Anxiety for Kahlua is too much.
Okay.
So if a client's feeling particularly anxious, Blue will get up off the couch, just quietly go and lay down over. We've always got a space for them to go, and that space is a no-touch zone. Like, that's their safe space, I suppose, which, again, you integrate that in. You talk about you have a right to step out. We have a right to respect each other. We have a right to put our boundaries in place. So it's kind of picking every piece and using it as a opportunity for that client to learn more about themselves and their rights.
But so
Kahlua doesn't manage anxiety well, but grief and loss, she has a heart of gold. She lays there and she just looks into the person's eyes and just holds them.
Aww.
Whereas Bacardi can't hold heavy grief, so she will get up and she'll move away. So there's a real diversity about it, but they need to have the right to get up and walk away, because it's heavy and it's a lot.
Absolutely. And dogs, I find, even just with Naya, dogs are innately intuitive, which is why they are so good as therapy animals. But just as, you know, our intuition and, you know, that, you know, we get compassion fatigue and burnout, I would imagine that therapy animals and therapy dogs would experience the same.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can tell. So we always, in the morning, I will lift up my boot, ready for the dogs to jump in. Most of the time they're fighting each other to get in first. But some days they'll just stand there and look at me and be like,
do we have to go to work today, Mom?
It's like, no, I'm not doing it. So it's like, okay, you can stay home today.
Yeah.
And they'll just pretty much, you know, have a personal day.
Yeah.
But it's the same when we get to the office and they're quite happy to be at the office, but I might open my office door because they don't just wander around. So I'll open the office door to go and have a session. And sometimes they'll just look at me and be like, today has been too hard, or do you know what? I just can't do it. So they get to just stay there in their space. But again, I think it's important to the client as well when they're like, oh, where's Bacardi or where's Kahlua? And I'll say, do you know what? They're not feeling so great today. Or at the moment, they've chosen to just, they need some rest. So, you know, we're kind of modeling that boundary, respect, compassion, you know, and then we can move into spaces where perhaps that's something that they struggle to do for themselves, because we're taught just, you know, you give and you give and you give and you do the right thing and you make other people happy. And if somebody asks you, you know, you're a bad person for saying no.
Yeah.
So this is our opportunity to go, do you know what though? It's not. It's okay to say no. It's okay for them not to be a part of this. And it's okay for you not to be a part of something that you don't feel ready or up for either.
Yeah. What led you to training as an animal assisted therapist?
Well, I had no intention to whatsoever, and I have my Labradors are farm dogs. I live on a farm. So socialization, I don't need to socialize. They've got each other. We've got, you know, all this land that they can run around on. They don't need to exercise, and I'm exhausted at the end of the day. I don't want to go down the park for a walk. So they were just my dogs, just our family dogs. And a friend of mine came over one day, and she's had some really heavy things happen to her in the past. And on this particular day, she was just talking to me about that. We were sitting outside and she was talking to me, and I didn't really pay too much of attention, but Bacardi walked up beside her, sat right down beside her, and just leaned against her leg and then put her face like up on her lap and was just looking at her. And again, like, there's this natural kind of instinct to just start patting and then you stop. And then Bacardi's like, no, you're not stopping. So she nuzzled and she did that. And while my friend, who does not like to talk about what happened, while she was speaking sort of in some parts of that to me, all of a sudden she just found herself just opening up, right? Just feeling real, this safety, like this grounded safety. And I wasn't even paying any attention to it. So that was just Bacardi to me. She's always nuzzling. And to me back then, it was like attention seeking for her.
Yeah.
She wanted a patch, she wanted some attention.
Pay attention to me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still here as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then afterwards, my friend just said, you know what? Wow. Like the way Bacardi just did that, I felt safe.
Yeah.
I felt, you know, that pressure of her body against my leg, the connection with her eyes and the padding, because that was amazing. So it was then, and I think she said to me, maybe, have you ever thought about animal assisted therapy? And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it went from there. But back then, so that was 3.5, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, trying to figure out how to become an animal assisted therapist, I mean, I Googled and Googled and Googled and Googled and Googled and couldn't find anything anywhere. Yeah. And eventually I did. But it was really tricky because it was definitely, like, there's a lot of more people doing it now, but it was really hard to find the training, the details, you know, of what exactly you needed to do in order to be safe, to be ethical. Because, you know, like I said in the beginning, I just expected her to be like a guide dog and do exactly as she was told. And there are a lot of dog trainers who are like giving jackets for therapy dogs, who they're passing the international therapy, I can't remember the actual name of the assessment, but there's an international, quite a significant and intricate assessment that the dogs must go through to get the jacket.
Yeah.
But I think the problem there is, depending on who you do that through, we've got a lot of really obedient dogs. But if Bacardi was just obedient, she wouldn't be giving in the way that she's giving. There wouldn't be the meaning of the work that she's doing in that space, the relationship. Yeah. She'd be doing great tricks, and, you know, we could build communication skills, we could build you know, awareness of body and self and stuff like that. But I work primarily with interpersonal trauma, the family violence, early childhood neglect and abuse, sexual assault. That stuff isn't about skill building. We're not going to skill our way out of that. We're wounded.
Yeah.
Then we need to heal and we need to feel safe in the world again. So Bacardi can bring to those clients what I can't, because I'm a human being. And from day dot, these people have learnt that humans, people who say they want to love and protect you, hurt you.
Yeah.
So to come in and allow themselves to be vulnerable to me takes a long time to build that trust, to make the decision that I can trust that you won't hurt me, you won't let me down, you won't tell me all of these things and then, you know, do something that really breaks my spirit, my soul again. So I can't do that, but the dogs have no, you know, if they want to connect with you, they're connecting with you. There's no ulterior motive, they're not getting paid, nothing. Right? So there's a safety in the relationship with the dog. And sometimes that's the first time they've had an intimate, close, personal relationship with another being where there is no ulterior motive.
It's not transactional.
Exactly. And there's no threat. So they actually, their nervous system gets to experience a safe relationship and be held in that.
Yeah.
And that's primarily the work that is happening, which can then, you know, let down some of those fight, flight, freeze responses. We can start to actually see the value of who they are, or they can start to see the value of who they are. You know, the dog cares about me might be the first place to start. Bacardi doesn't think that you are useless. Bacardi doesn't think you're stupid. You know, Kahlua doesn't think you're a waste of space. Look at her. Like, I can say what I want, I know, but look at her.
Yeah.
She's not going to say anything she doesn't mean. And so there's that piece of work.
Yeah.
That I can't do. Yeah.
And dogs, I guess, are picking up on energy and body language and and that as opposed to what's just coming out of your mouth. Whereas, you know, we as humans, we largely tend to respond to the verbal communication that people are saying. Whereas, you know, we obviously understand with trauma, words can often elude us and fail us at times, and we don't have the language to communicate that. And so they would be able to be picking up on that, I would think. So aside from trauma, where obviously we can see the regulation benefits, where else is it beneficial? What other issues are being presented in the room where it's particularly helpful?
So I think there's the self-esteem. I think self-esteem is really huge as well. So there's a, if somebody is experiencing really low self-esteem, there might be some suicidality, self-harming. But that's sort of, they're separate things in that, that numbness that can come potentially with whatever the underlying need that's being met, with self-harm in particular. But with self-esteem, again, it sort of comes back, for me, it always comes back to the relationship. It always does. And the experience that person has with the animal. And it's my job to capture the moments and sort of go, did you see that? Like, did you see that? And take that in for a second. You know, what would it be like to stay with that? Noticing her, you know, just noticing her, noticing you. And you can, you know, build in many ways. I use some trick training sometimes. You know, you sort of take pieces, like tools from your tool belt, you know. You take pieces that work. You take what that person is presenting on that day, if it is different than what the overall, you know, goals or their therapeutic process is. For example, some a young teen in out-of-home care, yes, there's a lot of trauma. She has a lot of trauma. She has a lot of abandonment issues, a lot of fears of people leaving her, and rightly so. And she's working through that. But this, there was this reoccurring issue of becoming triggered and then dysregulated. And in her residential care placement, just butting heads and it becoming a real power struggle, and the house staff doing what they thought was helpful, but it was triggering her to feel controlled and stifled, and she would just run. So there was a lot of yelling, there was a lot of swearing, there was a lot of all sorts of things happening there because she was triggered. So we did use trick training. I did say to her, do you know what? I see you. Like, I see the vulnerability. I see that when those people do that or say that, it triggers this old story for you. This, you know, little voice that sits up here going, whoa, 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 you know, alert, danger, fight back, you know, it's them or us. So I see that in you, and we can sit here in this session and we can reflect on that and we can connect, and I can see how gentle and, you know, tolerant you can be if it's Bacardi or Kahlua doing something that you don't necessarily want them to, or if I'm pushing a little bit further than you want me to push. But the thing that seems to keep getting in your way is the communication. No one's listening to me. No one's listening to me. No one's listening to me. So let's try and look at communication, right? What is that? It's more than just the words that come out of your mouth. And if you don't understand what's going on under here while you're speaking, sometimes those words that come out are not the words that you really want people to be hearing. So we set her up to teach Kahlua to do a bow. Now, bow is hard to teach and frustrating to teach, particularly when you've got some farm dogs who are like, what are we doing now? So she began with, so with a, teaching a bow is you cross your legs over, like a, the human, and you bend down and you put the food in a downwards motion. So they kind of, you know, go down. So the dogs a lot of the time just have no idea what's going on with that and they're quite confused. So it's, you know, we had to have a level of trust with each other to do it. Otherwise she would have gotten frustrated, and I don't want dogs to be on the other end of that.
Yeah.
So I started this process when I knew in this space, in our space, it was okay. She knew the dogs. I knew the dogs. I knew her. We could call it when if we needed to call it. So she started to do it, and Clue had no idea what was going on. None. She would lie down, she would turn around, she would just look at me like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
And my client was like, bow, 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 like this. And just Clue was like, I have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah.
Can someone just stop? And she was getting really frustrated. She's not listening to me. She's not doing it. She's not listening to me. So we'd be like, all right, let's stop for a second. What's going on? What are we doing?
Yeah.
How are we talking? And she's, you know, how are you feeling? Because so she would be able to, at that point, she was able to go, actually, I'm annoyed. Like, she's not doing it. She's never going to do it. She doesn't listen to me. She's got no idea. So we'd sort of use the trick training in that space to be reflective of, okay, what I'm noticing is a lot of words. It's the same word, but it's a lot. Like, if I was to say to you, like, hey, 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 like, how are you going to feel? What does that do to you? So she was sort of like, actually, it makes me want to, like, tell you to get away from me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, so even though you're just asking her to bow, the way that your energy is coming across is overwhelming for the person on the other side or the dog on the other side. So what if we tried that again, but you only say it once, just a firm, gentle but firm tone, and you do a smooth movement with it?
Yeah.
And so she did. Now, Kahlua didn't bow for many times after that.
Yeah.
But then we went through that and we used the trick training to look at communication. It's more than just the words that come out of your mouth.
Yeah.
It's your experience of the communication as well. How is your body reacting? What's that doing to your language? What's that doing to your ability to listen? Like, where's the prefrontal cortex? Nowhere to be seen. And in the end, I have this beautiful video that I took with her consent, where she had a treat. She silently and smoothly went down and flew about and then stood up, and she did that 3 times in a row without even knowing. It was the third time I said to her, do you mind if I just film that? I filmed it, and then I gave it to her and I said, what do you notice? And she's like, I didn't even say anything.
Yeah.
Like, no, nothing. So she went from being really dysregulated in when there was this sort of ruptured communication, no one's listening to me, no one's listening to me, to being able to calmly do that without even a single utterance of words. Now, for her to be able to see that, she was so proud of herself.
Absolutely.
And it was like this, this light kind of starts to shine and be like, actually, you know what? Like, I am capable, as opposed to everyone always going, you're so reactive, you're always yelling, you can't say that, you can't do this. It was like, you can if you know why.
Yeah.
And then it's up to you from there if you want to keep doing it. It doesn't seem to be serving you. Or can we see what it's like to do it this different way?
Yeah.
So there's sort of, there's that way as well of using animals.
Often we think about therapy as like, you know, yes, it's about the journey, but it's also about where you land at the end. But, you know, that's a really powerful example of where somebody starts to be able to create new language around themselves. They get to, that's empowering, you know, that's beyond just feeling proud or an accomplishment, or, you know, that they taught a dog how to do something. That's a sense of empowerment, and that comes from within, right? So, you know, just the new renewed self almost that would have come out of that would have been incredible for them.
that's my, you know, when I think about, people will say, like, who do you want to, who is the person, or what's the kind of presentation or client that you most want to work with? Like, it's not a particular client or person that I want to work with. I want to help people feel seen, heard, valued, and understood, but not by me. I want them to feel that by me, but I want them to feel that from themselves.
Yeah.
I want them to be like this young girl and be like, actually, no, I can. And when I can take control and use my voice, I'm not necessarily going to be rejected. And I'm not going to be rejected because I'm worth something.
Yeah.
And when someone turns around and says to me, like, do you know what? I said no, because he doesn't get to treat me like that. And I'll be like,
woo!
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm worth more than that. And I'm
like, yeah,
you are. And just the, just everything shifts.
Yeah.
Once somebody, you know, and I guess that's why I like working with interpersonal trauma.
Mm.
When someone has been beaten down verbally, emotionally, in whichever way, they don't recognize how incredibly amazing and powerful they are. Because to even be sitting in a therapist's room after the experiences that many of these people have been through, and sometimes forever.
Yeah.
Okay. And I might be the 10th or 11th or 12th therapist that they've seen. To be able to sit with them and hold space that is safe enough for them to uncover, to let that wound actually have some space to be seen, and to understand that, to be held in that, and to show some compassion, so that then there's a sense of release of the shame, of the guilt, of the blame, and of all of those narratives that have been force-fed. You know, you're not this, you're not that, you'll never be anything, you're fat, you're ugly, you're useless, your kids hate you, whatever it might be, to be able to shed the other people's bull.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, you see a shift and they're like, you know what, actually. And you're like, yeah, damn straight. Like, you do. You have value. That is the most powerful thing I have ever experienced in my entire life. And it's a absolute honor to be a part of that process and to see that, like the unfolding of that.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, it would be, I think most therapists, I would hope all therapists, but most therapists know how much of a privilege it is to sit with people in their pain and their grief and, you know, all of that heaviness. But it's, you know, I'm thinking about the beauty of watching that unfold when, and probably feeling a little bit like you're just sort of needed in the background, you know, and that, you know, that relationship between them and, you know, Bacardi or Kahlua is really sort of in igniting something inside of them that they didn't realize that was there all along. That
and
would
we
be
have,
really beautiful.
It is beautiful. It is amazing. And there's we have another therapy dog in our practice, Bailey, who's also one of Bacardi's daughters.
I'm loving the names, by the way. I can't believe we've taken this long to not recognize them.
I know. It's usually I usually have teenage clients come back one day and go, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Let's see if
it's
going
just
on
clicked
here.
For them.
Yeah. And Winston was going to be like Bundy. But I'm like, you know what? I think it's time I started to be, because the girls were all named before any of this. And the cat was JD and the cat was Vodka. And so it was all just a thing. But now Winston's
the first
now. So I'm like, maybe I should be a little bit more professional. But yeah, Bailey's beautiful. Bailey works with our play therapist. And she has She's just solid. This dog is solid. She has a beautiful temperament about her, and she just brings this sense of groundedness wherever she is. And she's taken some traits from her mother, and she's quite persistent. Like, you could go for a walk with Bailey and she'll just stop. She refused to go any further. And she'll look at a person that's just standing there and she'll be like, I'm not going anywhere because that person is me right now.
Right.
Doesn't matter where you are, park, main street, whatever it might be. And generally speaking, when she goes over to that person, there might be tears. There might be like a, do you know what? I've just found out, blah, blah, blah. Like, she's really good at that. But with kids in the play therapy space, we'll have children come in where, you know, they can't stay at childcare for a day. Their parents or their carers are just at their wit's end. I don't know how to manage this. There's throwing, kicking, yelling, hurting, all those sorts of things. It's a very dysregulated little person. And by integrating Bailey into the sessions, once it's safe to do so, not just throwing her straight in, but once it's safe to do so, we've seen children who meeting her became dysregulated and like all over the place because it was too much. And then by the time they're finishing up their therapy, we have this photo of this child sitting, you know, like with the hands on Bailey's face and Bailey just looking, you know, face to face right at them. And there's this beautiful moment, which then, you know, we print out and we do a nice little thing for them to take home with that. But so along with the play therapist, obviously, it's not just about putting the dog and the child together and they'll figure that out. Obviously, we need the professional doing the work. But there is something that most animals, most dogs at least, can bring into that space if we work with them. As opposed to trying to make them be a tool.
Yeah.
You've got to use what they bring. The same as you or I or any other therapist is going to use, you know, I'm not going to go and do, I've just trained in EMDR, but otherwise I would have said EMDR if I haven't been trained in it, right? Yeah. If I don't know what I'm doing, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
But it's the same as I wouldn't make any of the dogs or any animal be doing something that wasn't aligned with who they are as a being, an individual sentient being with rights of their own.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I gave you this question, I guess, with some advance notice, but we get to this point in every episode where I ask you, what myth are we smashing about animal-assisted therapy? What is it that grinds your gears that people think and you go, that's not the case? What are we smashing?
Do you know what? What pushes my buttons is when we're talking about the client, and nobody's bringing the animal's experience into the conversation. Right. So we see that often in schools. You know, there's big conglomerates as well that'll like, train your dog for a massive amount of money. We'll train it, you know, get it in the school. And then we see this dog being passed around to different teachers, being in different spaces, having kids all over them, you know, and everybody's going, oh, isn't it beautiful? Look how the kids are responding. Oh, isn't it amazing? Look at, you know, but then there's this dog, this beautiful being that is, you know, I mean, babies are pretty too. Babies are beautiful and they make us feel lovely, but we don't bring our babies into a school and pass it around.
No.
You know, we don't bring our babies into our therapy sessions and pass it around. What really grinds my gears is when I see dogs being used.
Yeah.
So, you have
it's not show and tell.
It's not show and tell. Yeah. And nobody, they're not, you bought them here. They didn't get up and come in today on their own accord. You bought them here. They need, like any, so if we had a child, for example, we wouldn't pass them around like to different classrooms.
Yeah.
We would have one person, even if it was show and tell, for example, we'd have one person go with that child because that's my person.
Yeah.
This person knows me. So my handler needs to know me, needs to be able to pick up on my early warning signs, my stress signals. They need to know what I like and don't like. And they need to advocate the hell out of things for me. They need to make sure that I am safe. So my dog needs to trust me and feel safe with me in any context, any area, the same as my clients need to be able to trust me and feel safe with me.
Yeah.
I owe it to both of them to create safety, choice, and have opportunities to tap out at any time.
Yeah.
So that really, and I think that will always come back to training, having the training to understand it. Because like I said before, I didn't know that when I started.
Yeah.
I thought Bacardi needed to be a certain thing for my client and that every client needed that because I said I was an animal assisted therapist. So come on, Bacardi, we've got to do it.
Yeah.
And then when that lady said to me, what are you doing? I was like, oh. And since then, now I know I have a much safer dog because I'm not pushing her beyond her limits because we'll all snap eventually.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, get the right training, understand what it is in the room. Otherwise, you've just got a dog in the room, you know, and the dog in the room is helping with the endorphins. It's, you know, it's beautiful, but you're missing this massive piece.
Yeah.
That is so, it's so important. And, you know, I put together an online training about that piece. Like I've taken that bit for me is like the ethics for the animals and the, you know, what that looks like in the room and how it plays into or how it's delivered in a play therapy perspective, in a strength-based perspective, in interpersonal space, how that actually is rolled out in a way that's safe and effective and ethical for all three people in the room or more if you're more than one client.
Yeah.
You know, and just sort of shove that out into the universe and never really did anything else with it after that, but it floats around in the universe somewhere. that to me, that's what's the most important thing. We need to see our animals as the unique individual in the room, the same as our clients are. And then advocate the same as we would for our clients.
I love that. Now, before we finish up, where if somebody is wanting to work with somebody who is an animal assisted therapist, where can they go about finding someone who they know is trained and is not just, you know, I'm very clear and open in that Naya is not a therapy dog. She is not trained. She, you know, I get consent from all of my clients and all of that sort of thing. But if somebody is wanting a specific animal assisted therapy therapist, where can they find that?
So the best place to look is to go onto the website of Animal Therapies Limited. So Animal Therapies Limited, like I said, it's a dysregulated field. Right? But Animal Therapies Limited started, well, I can't remember how many years, which is terrible because I'm a committee member, I should know that. But it's pushing for recognition and professionalism across the animal services sector. So that's assistance dogs, therapy dogs, school dogs, the whole lot. But what they have is they have code of ethics, they have practice standards, they have a database as well of approved providers. So if you jump onto their website, you can see a list of approved providers. They're the people who have been able to show that they've done the training and certification. And there's also a page on that website that has, you know, where you can access training if you're a professional and you want to do training, equine assisted therapy, the whole range. So not just, I mean, I knew somebody who had a bearded dragon.
Oh, I love bearded dragons. They're so beautiful. There's something about reptiles in terms of like bearded dragons or lizards and things like that I just think are beautiful. Yeah. I will pop that website in the show notes so it's easy access. If people have not seen, please, I will obviously put the website in the link in the show notes as well. But jump on to Anita's website and look at the sweet dogs because they are just gorgeous.
Even Winston made it on there, even though he's not.
Oh, I mean, we obviously have a cavoodle. So when I saw him, I was like, oh my goodness, is he black or is he chocolate brown?
Yeah, I know he's black. He's got a little bit of chocolate brown mustache and a white chin.
It's just beautiful. So if people have not seen that, jump on there, have a look because they are beautiful dogs. Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you were not there for the whole thing because you would be very distracting.
He's been underneath the Christmas tree. It's got that fake snow on it. So he's coming in his light spot, don't you?
Oh, sweet. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I hope people have land themselves in rooms where there are beautiful trained animals because they're just, I love dogs. Like I said at the beginning, I think just even for my own mental health, my own well-being, you know, I can see the impact that has. So I hope that this field just grows and grows. So, but thank you for coming on and joining me and talking all about that. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed joining us inside the therapy room. Thanks for listening.